Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. You get interest back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org, click on their banner. Again, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, www.mecu.com. There was a discovery, not discovery so much called, we'll describe it better than that in a moment, of the Higgs-Boffin particle. And it made huge news in science and around the world. But why is it so important, and what is it? And why has it taken at least the scientific world by storm? We're joined once again by Dr. Keith Jackson, who's a professor and chair of the physics department here at Morgan State University. Keith, welcome. Good to have you back in the studio with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
410-319-8888 is the number here. So let's talk about what this. I watched a couple of videos last night and this morning. One was explaining the Higgs-Boson to a seven-year-old. Because I watched that, and it really made sense because it's a field that doesn't immediately relate to everybody when they see it, and they're not sure why the fuss was made. Why don't you talk about a bit what that even was to begin with, and why what they think they may or may not have discovered?
Okay. Well, first thing is the Higgs boson. Okay. And first of all, I should explain what a boson is, and then I'll explain to you what the Higgs boson is. A boson, if you think about an elementary particle, it's an elementary particle that has what we call an integer spin. That means its spin in fundamental units is 1, 0, 2, 3, etc., an even number. And I'll go in a little bit to why that's important. The Higgs boson was predicted by Peter Higgs in the late 60s, 70s. And what it was, the reason why he had developed this theory is that a previous theory, or another theory, the Weinberg-Glashow-Salam model of the electroweak interaction, had unified something called the weak interaction and the electromagnetic interaction, which we're all familiar with. Now, why is this important? Part of the history of physics has been the discovery that forces that we thought were separate and distinct are really manifestations of one single force. The most notable example of this in everyday life is electricity and magnetism. We don't think of that now as being separate, but in 1878, when Michael Faraday proclaimed that indeed they were manifestations of the same force, he was kicked out, or he was denied membership in the Royal Society of London, okay, because that was considered a radical idea. Later, James Clerk Maxwell, discovered or unified electricity and magnetism to great effect, and in fact began the description which we talk about now of interactions between particles that has ended up in the creation or the discovery of the Higgs. What Maxwell did was previously we had looked at the forces between two charges. So we have a positive and negative charge. There's an attractive force between them. If the charges are the same, there's a repulsive force. What Maxwell did and others was to say, well, let's not describe particles by the force between them. Let's describe them by fields. So the idea is a field, if you think about it, is like a smell, an odor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So electricity has an odor. And in order to detect the odor, we have to have a charge here and a charge there. And the odor is what mediates the interaction between them. Okay. And so now physics describes, instead of describing the forces between particles, we describe the fields that mediate them. Now, it's fast forward up until the to now, the discovery of, or at least the prediction of the Higgs. One of the fundamental questions in physics is, what causes mass? What is, okay, we can all lift up objects and realize they have mass.
Right.
But why are there some things that have zero mass and other things which have mass? So, for example, the quanta of light, the photon, is a massless particle, and it travels at the speed of light. Okay, but the a mediator of the strong force, the nuclear force, the so-called gluon, has a mass. Okay, and so what gives rise to mass? This was a link, and this is an important question because in most of our theories of physics, we have to put mass in by hand.
What does that mean by hand?
That means it's not a fundamental result of the theory. We can say we have mass one and mass two, but we can't form. We couldn't until Weinberg's law formulate a theory where masses came out. There were no predictive theories about the mass of the proton,
right,
for example, or the mass of a hydrogen atom. Okay. And so that left us, the theory is relatively unappealing. The other important thing about the Higgs is that it explains, or the Higgs field, as I'll say now, not the Higgs particle, is that it allows us to understand the standard model, what particles are predicted by. So, for example, one particle predicted by the standard model is the Higgs boson. Now, fast forward to 1970s, to the late 70s, when Weinberg, Salam, and Glashow proposed their theory of the electroweak interaction. And now, like Maxwell, who unified magnetism and electricity, okay, Weinberg, Salam, and Glashow unified the electroweak interaction, the weak interaction, which is responsible for radioactive decay in things, and the electromagnetic force together to form one super theory or unified theory. Okay? But there was a problem. Okay. Now, how does that work? The way that works is that at the period of the Big Bang, when the universe was very, very, very hot, like 10 to the 15 degrees hot, okay? The way the story goes is all particles were massless, okay? Photon, electron, proton, neutron, all had zero quarks, all had zero mass. Then as the universe cooled, we had a process that goes by spontaneous symmetry breaking. And the best analogy is if you look at water, okay, once you're inside a tank of water, all directions look alike. But then when you cool that down to the freezing point, it changes into ice.
Right.
Okay? And so that's what spontaneous symmetry breaking is. Okay? As the universe cooled, the symmetry was broken. Now all the particles acquired mass. Okay? The masses that we see now. Now, the question is, well, how?
And the Higgs.
Peter Higgs proposed what's been called now the Higgs mechanism. And so the idea is that there's this Higgs field which permeates everything, okay? And at sufficiently low temperatures, a mere 10 to the 10 degrees Kelvin, they cool off. Okay? And then they feel the Higgs field.
This is a theory.
This is the Higgs mechanism. And that's what Peter's Higgs contribution was. Okay? This Higgs field, okay, just like the electrons, two electrons, which interact through the electromagnetic field, the Higgs field has three particles, three bosons, W, Z, and the Higgs. The Higgs is the most massive boson. Okay. So the Higgs is 133 times larger in mass than the proton. Okay. So as we cool down, particles now can feel the Higgs field. Okay. And depending on the particle, it either acquires mass or it doesn't. So the photon, it's still massless, doesn't interact with the Higgs field. The quarks interact strongly with the Higgs field, so they get big mass. Okay. And this is mediated through these three bosons. Okay. So we need to have this. So the point is, for this to be proven to be more than a theory, direct observation of the Higgs is needed. Now, again, back to why is this important? If there was no Higgs, that would mean that the Weinberg-Salam model for the electroweak unification had a flaw.
So what they discovered mm-hmm. last week in the CERN, this massive collider mm-hmm. that they built that America had but lost because we wouldn't fund it anymore.
Right.
Because we might have found this ourselves in America, but we decided not to fund it. We ended the funding, so Europe decided to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What they discovered, so what they discovered was they think that they're not sure. I would love to, when I read about it, they said, well, yes, we've seen it, but maybe we didn't. The short answer was we saw it. The long answer is, well, there's a lot of variables.
Well, what they've seen, what my colleagues would say, is they've seen a particle that has a 5 sigma standard, meaning that it's only one chance in 34 million that it was an accident.
Right.
Okay, there's just random chance. They see a particle at about 126 GeV. The Higgs was predicted to be between 90 and 130 GeV. And it appears to be a boson, meaning it appears to be a boson and it has zero angular momentum.
So in kind of sure, why are they spending billions of dollars on this accelerator on finding this to find this Higgs boson. Always say it wrong. Higgs boson. And the significance of finding it.
Okay. The significance, there's three things. One, we have an explanation for mass, how mass is created. Two, we have an additional verification of the standard model. All the particles predicted by the standard model have now been found. Now, the trouble is that the one of the things that's troubling is that there seems to be no explanation for gravity in the standard model and no explanation for dark matter. But else, we'll
or dark energy either.
Or dark energy. And so that will have to wait till another day.
Or it doesn't even tell us why an electric charge is what it is, right? Doesn't tell us that either.
No. No. Doesn't give us a reason for the quantization of charge.
So tell us why people are so excited, why it's so important. If it doesn't answer all these questions, why is it so important?
Well, because it first it verifies the questions that we've already answered and that we're on the right track. And also the spontaneous symmetry breaking process. You know, once people come up with theories like Maxwell, Peter Higgs, and Weinberg, Salam, and Glasshall, those theories are not just applied to these fundamental particles.
But are applied to what beyond that?
Magnetism. So, for example, how do you explain magnetism in solids? And I don't mean the magnet you put on your
right.
your refrigerator.
Right.
But at a quantum level, how do you explain magnetism and the interactions between spins and things when you just take a dopants and you put it in materials like I do?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, one way theoretically to explain that, you can do it phenomenologically, meaning just put it in and see what happens. But one thing that has revolutionized condensed matter physics is this concept of spontaneous symmetry breaking. Just like the field idea originated to Maxwell has revolutionized our view of electricity and magnetism. So now we have a tool that seems to exist in nature, not just a figment of mathematics, that we can apply to various fields. And who knows, like, it's taken us, Maxwell was in 1878. Okay.
Right.
So it's taken us more than 100 years to get to use field theory to the extent that we do now.
So if when we look at this, before we have to hit and go to the next segment, I'm trying to get a handle on if we – see, even what you're talking about, if it doesn't tell us much about the strong force that relates to this kind of electro weak force, you know, in your field of mm-hmm. electromagnetism. So tell me why it is – what is so significant and why should we maybe in some ways have been doing it rather than killing this kind of research? Tell us why it's important for all of us to kind of get our hands around this and understand it.
Well, in the words of a quote from Neil deGrasse Tyson is
that – just on the show recently. Yeah.
Okay. Is that this is a time – one of the things about fundamental physics, of which this is it teaches us, it gives us new ways to think about things. Okay? It doesn't tell us how to think about things, but it empowers us to be able to think about things in different ways. And that's probably in the long run, though you know you're not going to be able to cash it in at the bank, in the long run, that's the reason why we do this type thing.
So that's
then eventually, and I think as years go on at CERN, and you have to realize that the U.S., though we don't have we don't have the pride of ownership associated with having a big machine there, we are significant contributors.
Yes, we're part of this process. Americans,
CERN.
Right.
Okay, my colleagues, Dr. Homer Neal at the University of Michigan, Dr. Keith Baker at Yale, Dr. Larry Gladney at University of Pennsylvania. They all participate in this experiment. And so, yeah, I would have loved to have seen the superconducting super collider here. But I'm more interested in the data that comes out. And it doesn't really – the pride of ownership – is one thing, but being able to know that now these things, these tools exist, and these theories have been verified, and we're on the way toward unification. And this might be one step toward understanding what dark energy is, what dark matter is, what gravity is, and that's the other great mystery.
So what we'll do is I think what you've inspired me to want to do is sometime in the next month is to bring you back and take those last three things we talked about, those last four things we talked about. Let's define those and have a roundtable about that. I think these are important because it has to do with who we are and what we live in.
Well, it's so, even a better one, what our definition of time is.
So add that
or
to
does
this.
Time exist?
Add that to my list. I'm just writing these all down. Add that to the list as well, so we'll come back and do all of that. Dr. Keith Jackson, Chair of Physics here at Morgan State University. It's really always a pleasure to have you in the studio. We're going to make this a more frequent visit.
Okay.
Thank
you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Folks, make a very brief break. Don't go away. Councilman Bill Henry is here and Hassan Giordano.